listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thought I'd play a little Stefan Grappelli and see what we could get to wake you up with little strings. But thanks for joining. As always, 524-1080 is the number to call in if you have any questions or any comments. Feel free to call in and share them with us or ask us. And today, I've invited Mr. Bruce Wilson of the Talk to Action. And Mr. Wilson has appeared on the show before, and back in April and May, and speaking on many issues and subjects regarding the International Transformation Network, Mr. Duke Iona, Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona, Mr. Ed Silvoso, the Harvest Ministry, and the International Transformation Network, and on and on and on. And the reason I thought I would bring him back, I was watching the recent news stories, and I personally went to some of the stations and gave them specific information, and I'm learning now what they mean by an exclusive story. You bring to them a story that they have no knowledge of or had knowledge but refused to do anything, and you give them, and it's exclusive. And then the process starts where they then start to exclude the party that provided the information, like myself, and put their own twist on the story. And then you end up getting things such as Carol Cox is a fringe blogger, whatever the heck that means. Now, I've been in this town for 20 years relating with the media and giving all kinds of information, but I'm a fringe blogger. So what that tells me, based on my knowledge and my expertise and what I've done, they know that I'm not a fringe blogger. But I guess, being that the Internet is becoming the death of many media outlets, you want to talk it down. So what happens? Anyone else that comes with information, they're not really going to go delve into the subject matter, because if it would have, they could have and should have, but they didn't. And so when people like myself or Bruce Wilson or many of you are out there, the story is twisted or half done or half baked or whatever, and they go off half cocked, and when they present it to you, they leave it so that a party such as the Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona, who openly has been parading around and traveling to and from South America and other places preaching the gospel, and I have absolutely no issue with that. I think that people that fear God or have a certain deity, they are looking to better themselves and better other human beings and the planet. But sometimes when you start to talk about burning the books of others and destroying their idols and what have you, you introduce a new aspect, a new element to the game. So what I wanted to do today is, while the media, the local media, fail in total to grasp this thing and see the importance of Mr. Iona's involvement in this cult-like effort. And it's almost a fever of sort when you look at it. They're supposed to be spiritual and uplifting the souls and minds of others, but they're intervening in others' lives. They're out campaigning, wanting to infiltrate government. And he has many occasions lent himself in his official title as Lieutenant Governor. But when asked loosely by the media, instead of corralling him and saying, give us a specific statement to these specific questions, they didn't do that. So we're going to try to do that today. And I'm going to start by, I have Bruce as a guest this morning, and he's calling from Massachusetts. But we're going to play a small bit of tape where Mr. Iona, Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona, he claims that he's not a member. And Mr. Wilson has actually recovered DVD on video that they've been producing now, not Mr. Wilson, but this is product of Mr. Iona's and his effort and others, quoting him as being completely contrary to what he claimed here on KITV news report. And you'll hear him speaking in the second portion that he is saying he's not a member of the ITN or the Hawaii, the Transformation Hawaii. But in the first portion, you'll hear him say that we here in Hawaii are members of. So I'm going to try to sort it out, but I want you to hear it straight. And as Mr. Iona says, it's taken out of context. Well, I've asked him to denounce them. I've written questions to him. He has ignored them. And his only speech to this, or speaking to this, is specifically when he is behind the camera or in front of the camera with guarded people that are guarding his image. So let's have it. Bruce, are you there? Good morning, Bruce. Are you there?
I am.
Okay. Thank you for joining us and welcome back.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I'm going to play this bit that you forwarded me, and we tried to share it with the media, and I'm trying to set the record straight, and if Mr. Iona's listeners are out there, please call with specifics. Don't give me the runaround. Bruce and I are willing, and we are availing ourselves to you. If things are taken out of context, then we're asking you to be specific as to how it's taken contextually and misused. We're going to play this right quick. It's going to be a series, about 2 or 3 minutes. Are you okay with that, Bruce?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
As you know, here in Hawaii, I'm a part of a prayer evangelization program called Transformation Oil. And we've seen some great things happen within the last few years because of prayer.
I am not a member of Transformation Hawaii. I am not a member of the International Transformation Network. I have participated in some of the events, as I stated, because they share some of the values and the tenets of my basic Catholic Christian belief.
We're one body of Christ. We're one church. And we're all here to disciple the nations, here in Hawaii and everywhere else. And I want you all to know that. On behalf of the people of Hawaii, I extend a special greeting of aloha to, first of all, Ed and Ruth Sabosio, and everyone gathered for the 19th Annual International Transformation Network Global Conference at the Hilton Hawaiian Village.
Pastor, sanctify your people!
Pastores, santifiquen a su pueblo!
You go and you tell them if you have any idols in your home, we're going to burn them.
Díganle a la gente si tienen ídolos en su casa, los vamos a quemar.
You have any witchcraft items in your home, you bring them Sunday, we're going to burn them.
Si tienen cosas de hechicería en sus hogares, vengan el domingo y los vamos a quemar acá.
We're not going to have witchcraft in this church.
Welcome to Transformation Hawaii.
Hawaii was the first, I promise I would be the first Christian state in 1992 in the Aloha Bowl.
In his 1999 book, Hardcore Idolatry, Facing the Facts, evangelist C. Peter Wagner describes how his close colleagues Cindy Jacobs and Ed Silvoso, during an evangelism campaign in the Argentine city of Resistencia, instructed their followers to gather up and burn supposedly idolatrous objects, including Catholic saints, Books of Mormon, totem poles, and native art. In the spring of 2005, Hawaii Lieutenant Governor James Duke Iona starred in an ad for the International Transformation Network's first major Hawaii conference.
On May 20th and 21st, people of Hawaii, I invite all of you to come to the Neil Blaisdell Center to experience God's movement here in Hawaii. Transformation Hawaii is truly an experience that you'll never forget.
Transformation Hawaii is based on the concept of prayer evangelism as described in the book of the same name by Ed Silvoso.
The movement is happening, the movement is going, and we all need to be a part of it.
In 2006, violating state ethics rules, Iona accepted over $7,000 in gifts to fly to Argentina and attend evangelist Ed Silvoso's 16th International Conference on Nation Transformation.
Local needs are presented and kingdom alliances are formed.
I welcome everybody who's willing and who thinks they want to partner with us.
In your spirit upon the people and the residents of Mardi Plata. It's taken me 9,000 miles approximately away from home to understand what is happening in Uganda, what is happening in Argentina.
Okay, Bruce, while everybody is fresh with their fresh cup of coffee, is there anything in there that was taken, that you took out of context?
Well, I mean, context is a funny word. Usually when I run into accusations that I've taken things out of context, the implication seems to be that there's a mischaracterization of what is going on. When this story broke out last week, I was startled to see, say, for example, Daryl Huff on KITV from KITV writing that this video was lying about Duke Iona's statements, whereas when you played the first three clips of Iona speaking, I presented those with absolutely no characterization whatsoever. In the video, I just identified the time and the place that Iona was making those statements, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
So anything anyone read into that video footage was simply what they read into it. Individually, I wasn't actually saying anything at all. I was just presenting footage of Iona speaking and identifying when he was speaking. So, of course, I could have presented longer excerpts of Iona, the longer video cuts, which I've also posted on the internet, by the way, and but the longer ones are, if anything, more incriminating, I would say. So I find the accusation of that I've taken things out of context to be rather funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I want to speak to a specific point. In what we just played, it said that it spoke about he was in violation of the ethics rules. And real quickly, because you are my guest, I want to make sure that I afford you all the time you need to share with us and to, if you want to, not counter, but just offer greater insight. I want to lay out real quick my experience with this ethics complaint that I filed. Not a fringe blogger, not Bruce Wilson, but I, as a citizen of this state of Hawaii, a taxpayer, a watchdog, and just simply a person who's concerned. I filed this complaint with the Ethics Commission in May of 2004 that spoke to the free gifts and the nature of which they were reported, and the gifts that were given to Lieutenant Duke Iona and his wife, as well as former State Senator Norman Sakamoto, to attend this ITN party gathering in Argentina. My initial contact with the Hawaii State Ethics Commission was that I wanted to inquire and to file a complaint, and I offered to file an anonymous complaint. Well, they refused and rejected that and said that in order to file, they must receive a formal complaint. Well, I filed a formal complaint, and they told me that I must have it notarized and I must swear to an oath that it was factual and true, that I was who I was and what I'm alleging. Now, all the information that I filed came from the State Ethics Commission in the report. Well, I returned with my attorney, and by the way, all of this is on video. I filmed it in this process because I smelled a rat and I wanted to document and share with you, and knowing that the media would be lazy about it because they either don't want competition or they want to shape the political outcome of our voting process here. But whatever the reason is, I arrived at the Ethics Commission with my letter of complaint, my formal complaint, notarized and all, seeking to take an oath, and I was told, we can't accept that because you mixed the two names. You have Iona and Sakamoto in the same letter. So we must reject that, and you can return and file another complaint. So I left. Went and rewrote it, separated the names, returned, and then again they wanted to reject it. But with a little force and encouragement, they accepted my complaint. But then when I asked them, do I take the oath? No, you don't have to take the oath. But remember now, that was the original condition. File a written complaint, can't file an anonymous. You got to file a formal. You must swear to an oath and get it notarized. Well, the notary is good enough for you. Don't need to take an oath. So then I leave, and I didn't hear anything for a couple of months. And I inquired, and they told me, Mr. Chong, one of the attorneys there at the ethics office, tells me that, well, we may not do anything with this. We may just put it in the trash can. Now, I had to file a formal complaint. Well, I objected, and, well, that's just one option how we can address this. We really don't have to investigate it, so we might just discard it. Well, do I get notified of this action? No, you don't, because everything from this point on is confidential. Well, I've inquired two occasions in between that, and as of last week I inquired, and I was told by the same attorney at the Ethics Commission, we're still considering this complaint of yours. But we can't tell you at what stage because we are prohibited from discussing it or disclosing any element of it. Well, I then provide him, listen, on KITV4 in an interview just recently, Mr. Iona releases a statement from the Ethics Commission saying that the Ethics Commission dismissed the complaint. And this occurred on August 19th of 2010. Now, the Ethics Commission knew that I was interested, and they knew that they had issued this decision, but they gave it to Iona to keep so that when he is challenged again, he could then have, so to speak, a get-out-of-jail card, or that would be the trump card or the wild card. So our Ethics Commission whitewashed my complaint, enabling and being political about it. And this is under the legal Iona administration now. This isn't come under anybody else. This is the wolf and the fox is guarding the hen house, and he controls the hen house. So this is what happened with that that complaint that I filed. And it's a very short, it just simply say they dismissed it. No explanation, no anything. But the Ethics Commission lied to me. The Ethics Commission forced me, caused me, compelled me to file a written formal complaint. And then in turn abandoned all of that and just became political. So they whitewashed this complaint. So anyway, Bruce, go ahead, and I want to make sure we set that record straight and share with the public.
Yeah, well, I want to add to that your story about the ethics complaint. I just wanted to get the details straight in my mind, so I went and looked up, you know, on the ethics, on Duke Iona's gift disclosure form in question, which was from 2007, listing the gifts he received in 2006. One of the people who funded his 2006 trip to Argentina, one of the entities was United in Prayer, and so I looked it up, and sure enough, you can find that listed as a corporate entity on the Hawaii.gov, Hawaii State Government website, and it was founded by Cal Chenin of the Moanalua Gardens Missionary Church in 2005, and so, and it's still registered. He files every year, and it's actually a big business, but I don't need to go into that except to say that it runs, it's the entity that runs the Apule Kakao thing that they do every year, that goes out on all sorts of Hawaii media. So anyway, Chenin's United in Prayer was one of the entities that paid for Iona's trip, and well, Chenin's part of the leadership of the International Transformation Network and Transformation Hawaii. He has been a regular at these International Transformation Network conferences since 2005, and one of the other people giving money was Miles Kawakami, who he's one of the officers the corporation Hawaii Transformation, otherwise known as Transformation Hawaii, and also recently rebranded as Hawaii Heinalu. Transformation Hawaii is in turn officially a chapter of the International Transformation Network, and Hawaii listeners will be interested to know that this the ITN as a corporate entity is registered in Minnesota. But it's had base of operations, at least it's held most of its conferences, its big ones, for the last 10 or 20 years in Argentina. But recently it's moved, it seems to have moved its base of operations to Hawaii. So it had its big, in 2009 it had its big conference it calls the International Institute on Nation Transformation, at a couple different places near Honolulu, starting at the Hawaii Hilton Village, and Duke spoke at that conference. But anyway, Miles Kawakami is in the core leadership of the ITN's main entity in Hawaii. So basically, here you have two people who are, without question, part of this international group, the International Transformation Network, and they're funding Duke Iona to go to their conference. Well, what's to be said about that, except that other leaders, major leaders in this Transformation Hawaii and International Transformation Network, their leadership interlocks with the Hawaii Family Forum, which has very recently been fined by the IRS for illegally lobbying, violating its nonprofit status. That's all it seems to do, actually, is lobby, mainly against gay rights legislation, but it's not solely confined to that. So anyway, here's a group of people who they're expressly political, and they're paying for Duke Iona to go to their conference. You know, he accepted over $7,000 for he and his wife to go to this, to fly to this Argentina conference, and money for the hotel, the lodging, and the cost of the conference. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to see, and you've pointed this out to me, Carol, that it's hard for me to see this in any other way other than some sort of political payoff. There's no, Iona didn't list any sort of state, reason of state business on his gift disclosure form. Mm-hmm. So it gives all the appearance of being a bribe, and I'm rather surprised given, I guess the ethics board doesn't actually do any research, or they would have found rather quickly that people paying for this, for Iona's trip, are themselves the leadership of Transformation Hawaii and the ITN, which was running the conference.
I'm concerned the way this was handled with the Ethics Commission, for example. Let the public hear, and I'm going to post this letter later. We actually obtained, even though the Ethics Commission refused as recent as Friday to give me a copy of this letter that they sent to Iona, we were able to obtain one. And here's the letter to Mr. Iona's, a Lieutenant Governor Iona's lawyer, Mr. Ayabi. It is at its adjudicatory meeting of August 18th, 2010, the Hawaii State Ethics Commission voted to dismiss the charge filed against your client, the Honorable James R. Iona, Jr., Lieutenant Governor, on May 4th, 2010. Mr. Cox, Carol Cox, filed. Now, a copy of the commission's order to dismiss, and we have a copy of that order. It didn't say why, gave any references, but some of the concerns the listeners should be interested in. They didn't want to do anything on this for political reasons, because you would, first of all, under 8411, that's the state statute, and 11.5, revised statute, you have to show that an individual received money or gifts to influence, be influenced by the giver as a legislator or an employee. Well, what they were seeking to influence Mr. Iona, and clearly he's willing to deliver the public, the state of the schools, our language, everything to God on behalf of Silvoso and the ITN, that is directly with Cal Chenin and others to influence HB 444 and to do all of that. So the Ethics Commission knowingly whitewash this thing, and they're as criminal as anything in here. But who do they answer to? Well, they fall under the state auditor's office, Marion Higa, but who do they answer to? Absolutely no one. So we have seen the greatest injustice, and I've firsthand experienced it, that this was a cover-up on part of the Lieutenant Governor's office, on part of the Governor's office, on part of the State Ethics Commission. And as recent as Friday, they refused to give me a copy, even though I'm the complainant. I don't know about you folks out there, but if I file a complaint, I think at minimum I should be apprised as the outcome of that. But it allowed Iona to have this letter in hand, freeing him or clearing him, so to speak, and so that myself and others like Mr. Wilson on here would be speaking about something, and that he can then in turn say, you see, they don't know what they're talking about, or you see, there's misrepresentation. The Ethics Commission committed one of the most egregious behaviors I've ever seen in government in this state, to sit there and lend itself to this sneaky, sleazy practice. But anyway, Bruce, you go ahead. I get.
Well, where do you think, where do you want to take things? There's so many directions I could.
Well, just go things. Because we can't seem to get anyone to pin his tail to the donkey here and have him to stand in on this block and answer the questions. So let's try answering it for the public, at least give them greater insight.
Well, one of the things that strikes me is, for one thing, your listeners probably would be interested to know that this is more than just this concerns more than gay rights, as I've been writing in a couple different pieces I published recently, last week. The leaders of the International Transformation Network, they write about it in their books, and these are books in print, you can buy them, and, about how they burn native arts, they burn statues of Catholic saints and pictures of the Virgin Mary. They burn books of Mormon. They burn totem poles. They burn native masks and drums. And And I found one account of this in, well, back up, that 2009 conference that Duke Iona spoke at in Hawaii, the International Transformation Network Conference, well, the brochure for that, it's a very professional brochure, it features endorsements from religious leaders, and the prominent ones include a guy named C. Peter Wagner, a woman named Cindy Jacobs. Well, Ed Silvoso, who leads the ITN, and Wagner and Jacobs appear in Peter Wagner's book, and Wagner tells about how they were down in Argentina, and they got people there believers to bring all their supposedly idolatrous objects, Catholic relics and Books of Mormon and Native art and so on, and they threw all the stuff in a big 50-gallon drum and poured gasoline over it and set it on fire. Well, Cindy Jacobs has a book she's written, and these people write lots of books, and a book she's written called Deliver Us from Evil, which tells exactly the same anecdote, it's essentially identical. It also mentions that there's a Hawaiian pastor she knows, some named James Morocco, who I'm sure you know the name, has a few big churches in Hawaii, and she mentions that a couple of years ago, he held an event where he burned Hawaiian native art, and this is in print. You can buy Cindy Jacobs' book, "Deliver Us from Evil," on Amazon.com, there it is. And so, doing some homework leading up to talking to your show right now, I came across a letter that was sent to the Honorable Colleen Hanabusa, President of the Senate, okay, in January 17th, 2010. And she sent this. This letter was sent by a number of pastors and clerics in Hawaii. And lo, one of the people on the list, the list includes, Francis Oda, Cal Chinen, Alan Cardenas, who's now head of the Hawaii Family Forum and the president of Transformation Hawaii. It also includes this pastor, Dr. James Morocco. So here we have the people who are trying to influence Colleen Hanabusa to block the bill, the marriage equality bill, HB 444. On this list of pastors signing that letter, we have a man who celebrated his burning Hawaiian native art. So that's an interesting lens into the character of this movement. So that it's not just about the vision of the movement isn't just about attacking gay rights. It's about attacking the right of people to hold any sort of diversity of beliefs whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
It's utterly opposed to it. So. Yeah, I think that your listeners should know that, but it's a totalitarian vision.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a nice ecumenical Christian vision. It's something that could have been dreamed up by political totalitarians from out of communist Russia, or as a matter of fact, Ed Silvoso in his book he says that to disciple a nation is to what it means is to do what Lenin did with his Bolsheviks, or what was done in communist China under Mao Zedong during the those are the models that Silvoso is holding up. And he also cites Ayatollah Khomeini under Iran under Ayatollah Khomeini as an example of discipling a nation.
Mm-hmm.
So when Duke Iona got up at that 2019 conference and talked about how he and the ITN were going to disciple Hawaii and all the nations, you can make a good argument that that's what he meant, because he seems to be quite close to Ed Silvoso.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can see many videos and different sound bites, but can you share with the listeners, where did you obtain, what was your source of these, the video clips and that you have put together?
Can you just give us an insight as to where they originated from and who produced them?
They're coming to get you, I guess.
Background noise.
Sounds like the high steppers are coming to get you there.
No. Just a neighbor. My wife doesn't I think know that I'm on the radio. I never came over.
Okay, I didn't know if we need to call out protection.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the source of the video clips. Most of the video clips are videos that have been taken. But most of them are conference videos taken by the International Transformation Network itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the one video I found of Duke Iona saying that he is in the in Transformation Hawaii, that's a new one that was posted I think back in March. I hadn't seen that yet, but that was footage from something called the All Pacific Prayer Assembly. It's one of these big ecumenical so-called prayer assemblies that the movement holds. And I don't know who took that, but other than that, most of the footage I use is footage taken by the International Transformation Network and Transformation Hawaii themselves,
mm-hmm.
taken and created by these entities. So it's their voice.
Let me ask you this. Did KITV or any other local media here who has covered this, or I should say peripherally touched it, have they ever called you to speak to the veracity or the true nature of these or the source to you personally?
No, not once. That's why I find this very funny. There seems to be zero interest in attempting to ascertain the source of this material that Hawaii media has generally been disparaging.
Mm-hmm. So where does that leave you? I mean, me personally, I see this and I think, well, maybe it's a personal attack, but can you, as a generator of these or a person who compiled them, where does that leave you? How does it make you feel, if I'm not being too elementary?
Well, I mean, I'm bemused. I guess I once thought that American mainstream media had something to do with truth and actual facts, but my experience has generally been rather different, and so I guess I thought that there would be more interest in actually. Well, I should back up from that to say that I'm sympathetic in some ways with the position of people in not just Hawaii media but the mainstream media, because what has happened is that the movement I'm addressing, the movement that Ed Filoso's movement, the movement that which Duke Iona seems to be in, it's been very quiet for a long time. It's been very successful at advancing stealthily. People generally haven't really been aware it existed, or that they've seen it as to be, the evangelical right or fundamentalism. But it's what's going on. What you see in Hawaii, the Transformation Hawaii people and the Hawaii Family Forum. This is a distinct ideological movement, and it's got distinct leaders. They write books and so on. But people in the mainstream media do not know this exists, and there are too few academics who know that it exists too, and the reason is that it's emerged very, very quickly. It's essentially a created religious movement. You know, it's been, the people have created, have picked pieces from here and pieces from there, you know, religious pieces essentially, theology and ways of running churches and so on and organizing, and they've put it all together, but this is, that they started doing this really, in the late 80s and early 90s, that's when it really got going. So it's so new that it's really outstripped people's awareness that it even exists. So people see it. I mean, people knew that there was an evangelical right in Hawaii that it was opposed to, say, the HB 444 bill, but they weren't aware that it had this, the movement had this international dimension, and no one knew the specific nickname leaders in the movement. The only people in the movement do, really. That's the funny thing.
Right.
And Filoso is one of the biggest ones.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to I do want to be very critical of the media, and yet at the same time, I have a certain amount of sympathy for the extent to which this is blindsiding people.
Right.
In other words, who is this Ed Silvoso guy? Nobody knows, except for people in the movement. And if you're in the movement, you know, oh yeah, he's the author of Transformation, the book, and you know, it's been holding these conferences for the last 20 years, and
right.
People from all over the world go to these conferences and talk about how they're going to infiltrate, you know, government and business and education and media, so on, in their countries, and they formulate strategies, and
mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I have a caller, Jim. Good morning. Are you there? Question for Bruce or comment?
Yeah, I'm interested in this gift that Iona has received, and can he just go around accepting $7,000 gifts from people? Is there any limit on the size of a gift that he can receive? Was just accepting that gift any kind of a ethics violation?
I think that, Carol, I think you can probably address that better than I can. You looked into the details more.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, in a convoluted way, as the Ethics Commission attempted to explain while being evasive and while trying to cover for Iona and Sakamoto. Now, remember, there's two states. There's a state senator and a lieutenant governor, and they quashed it and whitewashed this investigation for both. Being partisan that's why I say they're just, I believe it was criminal, not partisan. They afforded these guys. But they informed me that it was $200 limit. But then the condition would be, you can give things that might be higher than that, but none of it can be used to influence a legislator or an employee or an entity working for the government to write or develop or introduce legislation. And as we see in this situation, that is exactly what the Iona, legal Iona administration has been doing. And remember, this Lieutenant Duke Iona is the Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona for 8 years, practically. So this isn't something that just popped up. And who paid for the bodyguards? Remember when he came in, he needed extra money for bodyguards. Now I'm beginning to see why. He was going to go to these religious events, and I guess if you trust in the Lord and you love God, you also still need some bodyguards. So who paid for those? All of those things. Who paid for the wife? I don't know why the wife would go. So Jim?
So are you saying that a gift that big is okay as long as... it doesn't influence legislation, or they're claiming it doesn't influence legislation?
Yeah.
You would think that if the limit on gifts was $200, that a $7,000 gift would be way over the limit.
Yeah, Jim, I could say something to this. When Carol first started digging into this, and he pointed out to me where you could go on the Hawaii State website and look up people's gift disclosure forms. I picked through the disclosure forms of just about every person in the Hawaii State Senate over a couple of years, and they were very interesting, actually, because some of the disclosure forms, some people would just meticulously go over literally every cup of coffee, and those kind of people, they never would take gifts worth more than $50, and, you know, over the aggregate over a year, I mean, they accepted $1,000 in gifts, but they were really going out of their way to show, you know, anytime anyone, a constituent gave them anything, they were writing it down. And then there was another class of senator who would accept, in some cases, some rather substantial gifts, but the money was for travel. It was for to travel to and attend conferences, generally out of Hawaii, for reasons that they were just justifying. It generally looked reasonable to me, a state business. So they were doing something to improve the economy of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this yeah. Wouldn't benefit the state.
No.
And the state doesn't have any direct dealings with Uganda, I hope.
I don't
know.
Well,
so
you know,
spent some time with the president of Uganda's wife and everything praying. I'm sure that benefited the state in some way, but it's very suspicious, and it's something that they shouldn't have been spending money for.
Yeah, well, that has, I don't think that to answer your question, I doubt Hawaii has any official contact, but certainly the International Transformation Network has an ambitious program going on in Uganda, so I think that's the connection.
But also, as you've pointed out many occasions, and the video points out, Jim and Bruce has come up, has recovered, they're saying no matter who wins, if at the time when Hanneman was in the race, if Hanneman or Iona or Sakamoto won or Gary Aquino, they would still have someone in government. And they've laid this out as a military strategy to take over. So it's left up to the... This is why the Ethics Commission, I say, it was sleazy in its approach and in its handling of this process, because while you and I have concerns, I think a dollar from any entity that preaches hatred and tries to mix God into government needs to be closely watched, because there are some people that have different beliefs and we must respect them regardless what they believe in, what they worship to. This is a free nation.
You almost think that Mufti Hanneman would have something to say about their burning of the Book of Mormon.
You would.
Oh, well.
Well, yeah.
Well, I'm gonna hang up.
Okay.
And it's very good. Thank you, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I appreciate your question.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Anytime. Andy, good morning. You have a comment or question for Bruce?
Yes, good morning. That was interesting that his comments were about burning the Book of Mormon. Or also, I think there's talk about anti-Catholic. And in this morning's paper, front page, there's a story about a poll that was done, and some voters concerned about Iona's ability to separate his strong Catholic faith from his decisions on social policy. So is it because he's Catholic, or is it because he's went to this conference that people are concerned?
I'm guessing that the concern might be a mixture. Probably it's some message has gotten through that, well, Iona is really, it's really fervent, but people probably don't know. I'm not sure how deeply through Poimea this message has gotten out that Iona is in a specific, seems to be in a specific religious movement called the International Transformation Network, or Transformation Hawaii. But I'm guessing a lot of people have heard that he dedicated Hawaii to Jesus, and they're probably wondering really what that means, what it translates into in terms of policy.
Well, I know that Hawaii has a large Catholic population, and that's interesting that the paper talks about his Catholic faith, not any other type of faith.
Yeah, well, also, Iona's clearly a charismatic Catholic, and that's been a big, big movement within Catholicism over the last couple of decades. So in this footage I found from the 2009 conference in Hawaii, I posted the 15-minute clip, by the way, on the net, too. We can get it at Silvoso's website as well, but it shows people praying over Duke Iona and laying on hands, and people are in the audience, they're waving their hands back and forth. That's charismatic. And the ceremony actually looks really similar to the ceremony that was conducted over Sarah Palin in 2005, and there's a reason, because it's the same movement. But anyway, even though, you know, Duke Iona stylistically is very different than Palin, but it's in the same, this is coming out of the same movement. But in terms of, I think there are probably a lot of officials from the Catholic Church in Hawaii who have no idea how virulently anti-Catholic this movement actually is. The way they operate is to find individuals, to win over individuals so they can say, you know, here's this Catholic leader or that Catholic leader, and then they're working with us, so we must be okay. And they gradually infiltrate in this way, ideologically.
Well, Andy... And
yes.
Jim, we're closing down on this hour, but I'm going to hold over in the next hour, maybe 10 minutes or so. But one thing, I'd like to advance a theory. I believe that Iona saw an opportunity like any politician. I mean, let's face it. Well, first of all, we're dealing with a politician. And then you take a person who looks, and he say that locally it would be advantageous to gather all of the people that are speaking on the HB 444. He saw that there was this great movement delving into other people's private lives and all, and he didn't care how it impacted people. He saw it as votes. This is what Democrats and Republicans do. That's why they call them politicians. This is what I think happened. He is Catholic, and Iona felt that he saw Cal Chenin, Francis Oda, and all of those people that, and it, like dogs or any other animal that runs in a pack, you start off fine, they're cuddly and prep, you know, cute, but at the end of the day, they have that pack mentality, and I think this is what happened with Iona. He saw the benefit of locally now, not nationally, locally. And I think when the limelight hit him, he felt that stage and that light, oh, I can be greater than just local. I'm an evangelist. I can now become worldly. And I think he got caught up in it, but initially engaged simply to capitalize on the votes that are here locally. And he saw that as a voting bloc, the religious part, who hated gays, who wanted to speak out. That's just my theory, and I think he's now up in over his head. And with that smile, but he's still the lieutenant governor. And he always introduced himself as the lieutenant governor of Hawaii, not Duke Iona, as he claimed. It was my personal visits and what have you. You there?
Yes. Speaking.
Yeah, that's it. What I'm going to do, if you have another question or comment, go ahead real quick, and then if you want to hold on, why don't you just hold on for a minute? We'll come back. We got another about 6 minutes. We'll be wrapping it. We'll come back. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we're going to take a break here right quick and come back for the second half of the Carol Cox Show. You can pick this up at carol@carolcox.com or talktoaction.com. Anyway, that's talk to the number two action to see what Mr. Wilson and others are talking about and have compiled. I thought I'd play that. That's for Gary, the owner and manufacturer of Macau Boats. Folks, you want to see a good boat? Go out and try the Macau Boats. Go to MacauBoats.com, M-A-K-U, or fishing lure in Hawaiian, but MacauBoats.com. You've got to see this boat and got a ride on it. It's a local manufactured boat, and I think if you're seeking a boat and want to buy one, go see Gary at Macau Boats.
Second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after CBS News on K108.
This is KWAI.
Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. And still have Bruce Wilson from Talk to Action. That's T-A-L-K, the number 2 action. .com. If you want to see or hear or read or what have you, or speak to Bruce or send him an email, talktoaction@verizon.net. Welcome back, Bruce, and I also have Andy on, and as I say, we carried over. Go ahead, we'll take about 10 minutes and then we'll move to the other conversation.
Okay, well, mahalo for having me back.
All righty.
And, Paul, I wanted to also say that I'm glad that you escaped from that. That I saw in the news that there was a fire out there on the Waianae Coast, and you barely got away?
No, not quite. It wasn't that dramatic. It's just that standing there and you see this fire and your car is parked. I mean, it was safe, but the way the fire started moving, you get quite concerned, and you fire is not predictable. So
yeah, well, I remember the firefighters' hoses got burned up because they had to abandon them.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was pretty dramatic. So I thought that was quite a good news report of you, and you're out there really helping our environment. Appreciate that.
But what happens is it makes sure when the firemen need a raise. And the firemen, and we hear a little story, one doing something bad or something. Let's think about the good things they do. That day, I had a little revelation thinking, we should forgive them for anything. We should open all the shops one day and let them just walk through and take what they want.
That's right. They are the first responders, for sure.
Ask the people in Hawaii Kai with that fireworks fire. And if you've seen that at midnight, dark, they were up there and they were successful, protected all that. So we owe them a greater gratitude than we show. So anyway.
You're right. You're right. Okay, well, so I just wanted to say that if, you know, in our country, we, I remember when... you know, the talk of electing the first Catholic president, JFK, and how the country had to get used to that. Well, here's a Catholic in Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona who, maybe we can look at this more positively, he's reaching out to people of other religious faiths and saying that there's common ground. Maybe we can look at that positively, and also we can look at it positively that you can love people who disagree with you on HB 444, but respect each other's opinions and just say that, you know, you disagree to disagree.
Right. But if you're going to have HB 444 supporters having a back door and a direct access to your office, but then the people that do support it, you oppose them and you work and orchestrate when you're in government. See, that's the issue. So it's, there's for me personally, there's no better song than to be singing God Bless America. But that's Carol Cox singing that. I love that song. And I love anything else with that. But I'm not going to look to my left and say, but, you know, we're going to exclude you because you believe in something else.
Well, a person who believes in HB 4, or who believes we shouldn't have HB 444, but believes in civil union, reciprocal beneficiaries, just has a different political point of view than you do.
Well, yeah, you sound like you got an open declaration. You must be a Republican, because this conversation is about that. This is about Duke Iona going and saying he's not a member of ITN, and ITN is talking about horrible things, and he said they share the same tenets. I'd like to know what tenets that he share with them. So
well,
anyway,
fair enough, and I'm glad you're having the program.
All right, my friend, thank you. Anytime, we welcome everybody, Republicans, independents, or undecided, or just political people. Anyway, Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, well, so I'm wondering, what's the wrap-up here? We know that, looking at polls today, I saw that Neil Abercrombie is polling as leading Duke Iona by a fairly decent margin. I think it was 51-43%. But so, okay, the reverse possibility, Iona wins or Abercrombie wins. And so if Abercrombie wins, what happens in Hawaii? In other words, do people forget that there's this movement? Because it doesn't go away. I mean, the movement itself will keep on going, and it's got a lot of other candidates too. It's running. I'm not sure, but I've found indication of Charles DeJoux, who's running against Colleen Hanabusa for Congress. I had a talk with Francis Oda, who's the chairman of the ITN, and, you know, in and of itself, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it makes me suspicious, and I do know that there are a number of other candidates who are definitely associated with Transformation Hawaii and the ITN, and I just haven't had time to chase all of those stories, but So this is a movement that's involves much more than just Duke Iona,
mm-hmm.
and it's not it won't stop. They'll organize as soon as the election is over. Bam, they'll be working on the next campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way they work.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to make sure that the public understand where I'm coming from, and we're all entitled. I'm just as nervous about the Abercrombie Schatz campaign as I am worried about the Iona for different reasons. I mean,
sure.
You know, because they are political, and give you some examples. There was statements made by Ed Case, who ran for office against Hanabusa and DeJew, and you would think they hated one another, and Ed brought some very good points about this, but then for some reason he's had amnesia, and I see him now supporting Hanabusa. And then you see Hanneman standing there raising a hand of Abercrombie. So I have to be careful in not giving any impression that I'm going to lay down on my pillow and say, okay, now that the Democrats are in, because they are about as sneaky, too. They're just not sneaky with religion. So
well,
I want to
make sure, in this state,
I don't want to. I think why I'm embracing what you're doing is that, well, it's either the LGBT community today that's being impacted, right, and wrongfully, and tomorrow it'll be people like me at the hands of the Democrats. And so I think what we as voters need to say is that we need to get away from the partisan politics and call it what it is. If Abercrombie shows some bad behavior, we vote him out and send him down the road. And if the Republicans can show us better, then do it. But it's that religious part that scares me when they talk about burning, and when the lieutenant governor goes and won't admit and own up to the fact that he's participating in it, and he twists and turns and then attack you as being a blogger. You know, so it's that kind of stuff. So I don't want anybody to go away thinking that this show is to push the edge, the favor to someone else. I wouldn't care, because I don't trust any of them at this point.
Sure. Well, I'm fairly leery to it for my part, and I've noticed that there are, I would say that from in my experience, the movement that we're talking about, the heavily politicized evangelical right, it's mm-hmm. it's God's hooks very deeply into the Republican Party, okay? And
right.
I know Republicans, even people who have been in presidential administrations, who have bailed out of the party because they feel like their party is left them. But at the same time, this movement has it's getting its hooks into the Democratic Party, too.
Right.
And it looks different, the Democratic Party. You know, in many parts of the U.S., Duke Iona could run as Democrat, and he'd fit right in. And people wouldn't bat an eye, just that Hawaii is a liberal state. So that the political spectrum is makeup is different, mm-hmm. but anyway, he in a more rightward leading state, Iona could run as a Democrat, and he'd fit right in, and he'd still be involved with the International Transformation Network.
Yeah.
That would be any different. He'd just be yeah. running on a different ticket.
Right. Well, anyway, how do people go to you again? I try to give it. I want to make sure we're accurate.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, the URL of my website is it's the word talk and then the number 2 and then action.org. So talktoaction.org.
Mm-hmm.
And also www.talktoaction.org. And that's the website I co-founded. And that's where you can... There are a number of stories.
Yeah.
They're in Hawaii on the front page currently.
I appreciate all that you've done, because you've enlightened me, and I've gone through and done my own research as well. And I can say to the public out there that if Iona felt, or Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona felt, that this was something taken out of context or falsely represented, then he should have spoken to that. He should not have leaned on or relied on the TV announcers and the reporters to fend for him. So, shame on you. But anyway, thank you, Bruce.
Okay.
And anytime, and probably after these elections come about, always you're welcome to call and share with us, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for having me on.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Aloha.
Okay, aloha. Bye-bye.
Well, In closing, I want to point out a couple of things because I can't stomach the entire scene here because you look at our rivers, you look at our streams, you look at our traffic, and the Democrats in control, the governor is Republican. But in regards to the religious right, well, you know, Hanneman too courted these people, and Gary O'Kino was drunk on some Kool-Aid that they gave him. And then there's the Senator Sakamoto. These are three prominent Democrats. So we got to be careful, and this is why I say to all of you, you need to abandon the partisan part because we're screwing ourselves by partnering up with someone who is doing just that. And the Democrats, too, had a chance to vote this now this in regards to HB 444. They had a chance to vote it, you know, so don't be fooled by these guys who talk about one another in the early elections and then all of a sudden it's as if they've forgotten, they want you to forget. And I would say if a politician showed me that, for example, if the Mr. Ex-politician stole money from a children's fund, and Mr. X lost to that person, I don't want to see Mr. X now standing and embracing and saying, I'm going to throw my support to this guy who I showed you stole money from hungry children. And that's how ludicrous this whole process is. So be smart, folk. I mean, we're screwing ourselves. They're not doing it to us. So the next time, you hold them all accountable. That's what the game is about. Don't get caught up in he's right-wing, left-wing, and he's this. Stay away from it all. And as much as we all want to promote our politics and our partisanship, better be careful. We can be ripped off by our friend as well as our enemy. So anyway, thank you, and I'm going to move on and talk to couple gentlemen that hailing from Kauai, and they have once again, I'd say it will compliment what I just said. Be careful of who you trust. And this is about the whale sanctuary and the expansion and the proposed expansion of the sanctuary. And as I say, whether I agree or disagree, whether you disagree or what have you, I believe that this is a forum, and I like to keep it that way for everybody to come and state their positions and or get it out there. Maybe they're like opinions. So I have Scott Majerus and Greg Holzman on, and this is in part with the Hawaii fishing news. And if you would, in the coming months, this subject will be brought up. This will be brought up in the Hawaii Fishing News. And, gentlemen, good morning. Are you there?
We are here. Good morning.
All righty. Let her rip. Tell us, introduce yourselves a little better, and I'm sure I just massacred your name. It's such an awesome name, but you know, go for it.
Okay. My name is Scott Majerus, and I'm from Kauai, and I'm also joined with Greg Holzman, who is also from Kauai. We didn't know each other about 3 weeks ago, and I live on the North Shore in the Kilauea area, and Greg's all the way on the west side, Kekaha or something, right, Greg?
That's right, yeah. Went on Scott's show. He has a radio show over here on the Kauai Community Radio.
What's that channel and how
next
to...
thing you know, we were talking about this issue, and Scott then got a couple of the representatives from NOAA with the Hawaii Humpback Whale Sanctuary on his show, and we started asking some questions, and the next thing you know, I think Scott didn't like what he heard, and we just started getting more and more organized, and it's been a whirlwind ever since.
Mm-hmm. And then, if you would, so that we don't appear to be pulling the wool over the eyes of anyone, your interest in this now, you're a fisherman, Greg, and as well as you're just a concerned citizen, and on, and Scott, can the two of you, because I think that we all have valid concerns here, and I don't want someone calling them, well, you didn't tell us who they were. So let them know what this is about, and give a... a small bit of what is really what you, if you could.
Okay, well, I'll just, this is Greg, and I, Greg Holtzman, and basically I started bottom fishing and commercial fishing in general off of Kauai, Niihau, and Kaula Rock about almost 30 years ago now, and I got my own boat about 25 years ago. And I found that bottom fishing was really what I did best. And it was probably about 10 years ago I started working with the Bottom Fish Enhancement Program with the University of Hawaii. And we have done a lot of work with surveys, essential habitat studies. I've been down in a submarine off of some of my fishing grounds where I've actually been able to see, you know, what's happening down there. We could find no destruction from our fishing practices in large coral beds on seamounts. And so, you know, I've got a fairly good experience with fishing. I'm very passionate about the island of Niihau, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later. But because of that, I a little bit more sensitive to when a meeting comes up, I get there. And so I was really the only fisherman on Kauai that went, other than my friend who I brought along with me, who was also a bottom fisherman, because we've been having to go to WestPac council meetings in Honolulu throughout the years. And the next thing you know, we were, you know, sitting in a room with 65, you know, environmentalists, for the lack of a better term, even though we all consider ourselves environmentalists to a certain degree. And these guys were really just going off the wall with the most amazing amount of regulations and restrictions and, you know, speed limits in the ocean, you know, not more than 10 knots throughout many of the sanctuary grounds, and incredible penalties of, you know, even hundreds of thousands of dollars for penalties for, you know, interacting with or having a collision with one of these animals. Even if it wasn't on purpose, you know, you got to go out there and go to court and defend yourself. So, you know, that kind of all of a sudden made me get alerted. I started talking to a couple of fishermen and brought along some paperwork, and they realized, geez, we're going to have to get organized. And for the first time on Kauai, really, the fishermen got organized. And I saw the whole thing happening with so we got involved with all the users of the ocean, not just fishermen, and it really kind of took off to surfers and every kind of ocean user you could think of. So that's pretty much me. And then Scott, I'll let Scott take it over from here, and he can tune you in and get you started on exactly what we're up against.
All righty.
Hey, Carol, this is Scott. Hey, first, I'd like to thank you very much for inviting us to be on your show. I really appreciate the service you provide to our community. I'm just a guy. I live up here on the North Shore. I have a small business I operate. It has nothing to do with fishing or anything, but I do guest host on a radio program from time to time, KKCR, which is our community public radio. And I got involved in this because it was something that I felt needed, you know, my attention. So I have no dog in this fight other than trying to preserve the way of life and the lifestyle that we have for ourselves and the generations that follow.
Mm-hmm.
So real briefly, I know we're short on time. We only have so much. This all boils down to, Carol, is a state's rights versus federalism of our ocean resources. And I want to just put this in context, because the Hawaiian Islands is basically cut into two different sections. We have the main Hawaiian Islands, which would be Niihau South, and then we have the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, which would be north. And a lot of people don't go there, and they didn't go there, but now they can't go there because in 2003, I believe,
2006, rather, the Papahanao Mokuakea National Marine Monument was created. Mm-hmm. And with that came, basically, we're not allowed to go there anymore. And that was that area of the ocean is 139,000 plus acres, square miles,
yeah.
Which is, it's larger than all of the national parks combined in our country. And it's a very large marine sanctuary, and it was put aside and taken from the state of Hawaii for the reason of conservation. And when it was done, it listed a number of endangered species that could be protected and nurtured in this monument. Now, fast forward a few years later, we have this marine sanctuary, and they're looking to expand their control to nearly all of our coastal waters, up to the high watermark on our beaches. And they will fall under federal control, which means we could have beaches and fishing areas and surfing areas and places that people paddle, canoe, everything taken away from us if they deem that area where we are enjoying the ocean is a habitat for an endangered species. And this is a dangerous road that we're on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I want to bring up is that the Hawaii humpback whale sanctuary really has been beneficial to Hawaii. We all want to protect all these animals, the monk seals, the sea turtles, the coral reefs that they're talking about. They're talking about the shipwrecks. All of these things, we're all for protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is we think that the state should be protecting them. There's a layer of probably 8 or 10 different laws, federal laws, state laws that protect all of these creatures, and we just see that it's really about enhancing the state's ability to take care of these things. And that's why it's so important that we get a governor in there that is going to take DLNR to a new level, and we're going to have more of a, instead of this top-down approach, we're going to have a community-based, because nobody knows your backyard, your fishing area, better than the people that are out there every day working it. It is not, Laura Thielen in Honolulu in the Capitol building who knows everything. So, that I just wanted to put that on.
Yeah.
So,
well, what I would like to share briefly from my personal perspective, if you'd have called me a year ago on this subject and you'd called me, I would have been shown some reluctancy, and because I'm an environmentalist and I believe we should protect. But I have to share with the public there that the momentum that this sanctuary has, I think there's a fever that I've not realized in the initial stages, and there is Pew and others are behind this. And I, the reason I say I would have, my opinion would have been different, I'd be guarded if you'd approached me a year ago. But now I dealt with the Pew people, and there's a gentleman here, Jeremy Posonius, who actually stole information from me, represented that he was working with Pew on sharks and shark fins to ban sharks. Took my information, took all of my hard-earned information and all, and my product of my hard work, used it, and lied to me. So, and he is in behind this and pushing people along, and you can see that story that I've talked about, and Pew refuses to. So when you have people like this behind the scenes working, and that's what they've done, see. I question and I'll embrace what it is that you folk are, at least afford you the opportunity on this show to share your concerns, because I too now, and that's the Pew Foundation, and there are people now involved in this.
They were instrumental in getting this whole Northwest Hawaiian Islands National Monument going. And behind the scenes, they've been, many of these environmental groups have been working in Washington, D.C. to bring this stuff up for the last couple of years with the expansion of this humpback whale sanctuary.
And keep in mind, most of these organizations locally couldn't afford to buy a bus ticket to Haleiwa. And but they are getting the money. Pew is putting the money behind them and working behind the scenes with their lawyers. And they're using the local people here, Conservation Council of Hawaii, who this is where this Jeremy Personius is housed in that office. And he works behind the scene with, there's other Jay and others that are out there working. You don't see them. So I think you have genuine and bona fide concerns that this thing is tilted. And what I would like to know, what are the politicians, our candidates for governor? They're going to be the ones who sign off on this, whatever this is, the final conclusion. How does Mr. Abercrombie stand on this?
Great point. Thank you. This is Scott. Carol, we have made an effort to contact both of our gubernatorial candidates because this is so important. Any action, any conclusion that NOAA comes up with does need the consent and signature of the sitting governor at the time. So as voters, I think it's very important we know where our candidates stand on this issue. And I regret to tell you that, you know, we got statements from both of our candidates, and we posed a question to them, you know, are you in favor of the proposed expansion of the whale sanctuary, National Marine Sanctuary, you know, within the main Hawaiian island? And I can read you the statements. They're not that long, but
Go for it. Judge for yourself.
Candidate Abercrombie, Schatz, says official statement by Neil Abercrombie regarding the humpback whale marine sanctuary. Governor Lingle requested that NOAA consider including new species to the Hawaiian Islands humpback whale national marine sanctuary. Local users are concerned that fishing, recreation, traditional practices will be further limited in this process. Too often our voices are not heard. I encourage any concerned citizen to apply for one of seven seats now available on the 25-member Sanctuary Advisory Council. Applications are available on the sanctuary's website. Ultimately, if NOAA moves ahead with any changes to the sanctuary, the mandated process requires that a draft EIS be presented to the governor, who is given veto authority over the proposals in total or line item. I want to assure all concerned that the Abercrombie Schatz administration will partner with local ocean users and will consult with them before signing any new agreement. So that's what came from the Schatz Abercrombie campaign. Not anything, in my opinion, you know, too solid, definitive. They're going to consult and they're going to, you know, but I, you know, that's what it is. It is what it is. Here's what we got from the Iona campaign. Statement of opponents, inaccurate comments. Duke Iona has issued the following statement regarding inaccurate comments our opponent made misrepresenting the state of Hawaii's federal effort to update the humpback whale sanctuary. Quote, our opponents once again provide the public, especially our local fishing community, with false information. Neither the governor nor the Department of Land and Resources has requested the national NOAA to include new species in the humpback whale sanctuary. NOAA is currently conducting its own scoping meetings on their monk seal recovery plan. These meetings are not an action of the state of Hawaii. The state has already notified NOAA that all monk seal recent activities are governed by the state as well as federal law. Accordingly, NOAA must comply with the state environmental review process. NOAA is also engaged in a separate effort to update the humpback whale sanctuary. The state has informed NOAA that any changes to the sanctuary must be approved by the DLNR and the governor and must meet state environmental requirements. So, in my opinion, Carol, neither one of those statements say we're not in favor of the expansion of the whale sanctuary. What do you think?
Wow.
It's a waste of their time, actually, to even, you know, even get into their statements because They're
sniping at each other, you know.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? You ask them a question about how it's going to affect us all, and they, pointing the fingers. That's why we need.
Well, and the thing is that we gave them enough evidence. You know, Iona is a judge, and we gave Duke Iona every bit of information, the documented information, you know, not our views and testimonies that you could ask for, and we still really haven't come up with anything. But we're still hoping, we're still developing, and we're still trying to educate all of these people, Maisie Arano, all our state legislators. And I can tell you that Scott has, from one of our state representatives, Roland Sagum,
really what we want to hear. And I think that that is really worth...
This is worth some airtime, Carol, yeah. And it's not that long. This comes from our House of Representatives, representative here on Kauai and Niihau, and this is from Roland Sagan. National Marine Sanctuary, in fact, Whale Sanctuary, as a Kanaka, Native Hawaiian, and Hawaii State Representative for West Kauai and Niihau, I have been consulting with my residents and natives of Kauai and Niihau. Based on a large part of these conversations, I have been compelled to respond in opposition to any plans to designate Hawaii as a National Marine Sanctuary. Natives and residents rely on these waters to feed their families. From its status as the National Humpback Marine Whale Sanctuary, which is now a single-species sanctuary, I feel strongly that the National Marine Sanctuary expansion is designed to take more federal control over state of Hawaii coastline and coastal and offshore waters out to 3 miles by using these marine resources to expand federal control. I feel the National Hawaii Humpback Whale Marine Sanctuary has done its job and that the recovery of the humpback whale population has been one of the greatest success stories of any endangered species in U.S. history. I commend you for all your hard work, but it's time to look at an exit strategy. A National Marine Sanctuary is no longer a good fit for Hawaii and its citizens. Too much of our coastal land and water surrounding the coastland has been put under federal control. We are a small island state which relies on its marine resources for food and recreation. In almost all areas where federal government has taken control of our coastline and surrounding waters, there have been restricted user and access issues that still to this day have not been resolved in favor of the citizens of Hawaii. We feel education can be accomplished by the state of Hawaii if the federal government would be willing to fund the state of Hawaii in their efforts to protect marine resources and educate the public. All management of marine resources should ultimately be locally based and state managed within the state of Hawaii. I reject any nationally based protection and enforcement except for the funding or consultation with the state of Hawaii unless it is deemed vital to the survival of these species, but only after exhausting all options and consulting those who use the ocean for work and pleasure as Hawaii citizens. Many, including myself, feel too many Hawaiian people were deliberately left out of the scoping process by vague announcements and of scoping meeting with no proposed vision in the announcement, but there was a proposed vision which was made clear at the scoping meeting. Many more of our Kauai residents would have come to the scoping meeting on Kauai if they had known more about the announcements. Citizens need to hear from your agency more than once and request many times from another public meeting and an extension of the deadline. These were rejected. We have federal law to protect all of these resources, such as Federal Endangered Species Act, the Federal Marine Mammals Act, and numerous other state laws. Federal government has already taken too much of our coastal waters and coastline through the Papahanaumokuakea Marine Monument. The National Marine Monument is being larger than all of the national parks combined and is enough of Hawaii's valuable resources for our national interests. For the people of Kauai and Niihau, the overwhelming response I have heard is against the expansion and reasonable departure of the Hawaii Humpback Whale Sanctuary from our state waters. Thank you for your help in educating the people. However, it's time for Hawaii to be about Hawaii's people who need to care for our own Mei Hawaiian Island resources. Sincerely, Roland Sagam, Hawaii State Representative, 16th District. Now, that says something, I think, on behalf of our people. It doesn't you know, tiptoe around the issue.
Now, hold on.
I wanted to say something, Carol, too, that I think is very important. What we learned from our discussions with NOAA on the air in their interview with us about 2 weeks ago was when we have a National Marine Sanctuary, everybody in the nation becomes a stakeholder. So it means that groups like the Pew Group and Save Our Oceans or whatever environmental groups might be out there, the Sierra Club, Earth Justice, and others, they are just as much a part of the process as you and I are as living here. And they get to make comments. And NOAA has received between 6,000 and 7,000 comments so far. And on the air, One of the directors or coordinators, Dr. Malia Chow, said fewer than 20% of their comments came from the state of Hawaii. That means over 80% came from out-of-state people. And so these organized groups, as you know, are very powerful and they're effective communicators. They have large constituencies. They don't care. A guy in Ohio doesn't care if we're not allowed to go to our favorite beach or fish our favorite reef or go surfing in a great surfing spot. If there's coral there that might be considered a critical habitat to a seal or something.
Right.
We've seen what happened in Fresno with the farmers and the little silver fish. So these laws have they have consequences upon us.
Well, we got to protect something. I don't want to sit here and represent that. People snipe at like the snail darter. We got to preserve. These are species within a habitat that in an ecosystem. But anyway, got a caller here. Filippo, you there?
Hey.
Good morning. Got
Aloha.
A comment? Aloha. You got a comment?
Make a comment. This caller's from Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
Of recent, the Honolulu Weekly did a story basically on an expensive tail, basically, one of which was
fish tail, yeah. Yeah, we've read that.
And it identifies what's been going on this sanctuary. I just want to say that looking for Abercrombie or Iona to do anything will not happen.
Mm-hmm.
The people got to make it happen.
That's right.
And people like your guests, basically, and
okay.
Their organizations. So we have to keep it going.
Yeah,
we get a hold of this... This is the October 13th, 19th edition, volume 20 of the Honolulu Weekly.
That's the one with
the lobster
on the front page, is the tail.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Aloha.
Thank you. Aloha.
Hey, thank you, caller. Hey, Carol, I want to mention right now, and I'll mention it numerous times, that we have a website that we've started. It's called HawaiiOceanUsers.org,
mm-hmm.
And we're looking to put information up there. We also have a forum that people can log on to and comment. And we're looking to bring the islands together because we live on an island. We're surrounded by water. If all of the water and beaches around us become a national sanctuary, we're basically tied in. I mean, and this affects all of us because we do live on an island, whether you fish or whether you surf or whether you don't. Everybody is affected by this because by virtue of the fact that we're surrounded by water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to everybody. And you know what? The politicians, we found out, they only listen when they get the feeling you have a large group. And we need everybody to realize what the stakes are here. And we need to make it clear to them we are in favor of protecting our precious marine resources. But we want to do it on a state level because we've seen what the federal level can do
right.
to others and ourselves.
Right.
And I wanted to add to that also that, you know, they've been trying to pigeonhole us into being fishermen. Both of these guys seem to want to say that, oh, this is basically a fisherman's issue, even though I must say that Abercrombie did, bless his heart, say he will consult with all ocean users. But, you know, they continue to try and make it out to be a fisherman's issue. And I can tell you that the reason that we were able to get, now I think it's going on 8,000 signatures on Kauai with 60,000 people within 16 days, we were able to bring 5,500 of those before the scoping period, that we only had 10 days to do it, is because of the fact that we did use the idea of Kauai ocean users. Now we're going Hawaii ocean users. We're trying to get this out to anyone who uses the ocean, that enjoys the ocean, whether you eat fish, pick shells, go down to your favorite beach, kayak, whatever it is, because we feel that is really it's a much broader group. And for the first time, I can tell you that the people of Kauai have really started to organize. And we've been trying to tell these campaign guys that, you know, this is the in my backyard issue that is truly going to win a campaign for one of these candidates. And that I think is really important to understand, that we need to get to the governor's headquarters and have everyone call up and ask their position to the governor's on the expansion of this whale sanctuary. We really don't have necessarily a problem with the whale sanctuary, though we feel that you know, we do not want our marine resources to become a national treasure. I don't think any of us want our fish dinner to be considered a national treasure and have some Joe Smith in Ohio tell us to put it back, because that's his national treasure.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is Hawaii's heritage, and we need to stick up for Hawaii as a group, as people. And so I'll leave it there. And
What do you need to do is, have you become concerned with the appointments? When the, not just who wins, but who gets in gets to dictate and pick and appoint the chairman of the DLNR, for example. And,
I think that's a huge issue.
And also, you there is the selection and appointments to the Western Pacific Fisheries Council. So when, so the public will know when this thing about if we, who we vote for and who it wins, this is a power that they have. And right now, the environmental community has the remote control on Laura Thielen, and the money is coming from Pew and some of the others. So I think and one of the other things that I'll bring up is that there's also the benefit to the NOAA in this relating to monk seals, and that is they're failing in the management of monk seal. So out in the outer islands, the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, for example, there's global warming, the increase of rise in water, and the habitat is being lost. So you have a different, and then there were some fishing, overfishing problems for the young, the diet of the young. So they're moving into making Kauai the, up to the shoreline, as you guys say. So you have a right to be concerned, and these are the things that, unless you get a politician who's going to be open, and when they say, well, we're going to form, well, they just say a task force or something to look into it, ask them to be more specific when you engage with them again. Just have them to lay it out for you, because I've watched Abercrombie. He oh, yeah, we're going to study that. We're going to do this, and, you know. But
nothing
what's
concrete.
The outcome?
Carol, this isn't. I want to make sure everybody understands. This isn't just about Kauai. This is about the Big Island. If you read their scoping report and you read their condition report and what they're proposing, it's amazing. And I would encourage everybody to go to www.hawaiianhumpbackwhale.noaa.gov, and they can read all these documents for themselves. And in the, with, even within their documents, they fail to show that many of the species that they want to include are even endangered, or if they are endangered, they're endangered in other places around the world. We take care of our sea life here. I think we've done a fairly good job, and the public at large deserves a lot of credit. We residents, we do a good job. It's the people that are outside of our area that tend to, you know, the international waters that are really harming our sea life. So it's just really important that everybody realizes this is a statewide issue for everybody who lives in the islands, and you know, we have to make sure that everybody is participating and our voices are heard, because it's, you know, once the federal government gets control over it through federal waters, I liken it to like living with your parents, okay? I have a 22-year-old at home right now. He just came home from school, and he lives in my house. And I pay for his food, and I pay for his shelter. And he has to be home when I tell him I want him home. He has to keep his room neat the way I want it to be done, and so forth. So I have control over him because I'm holding the purse strings. What he needs to do is he needs to move out of our house, and then he can stay up all night if he wants, and he can put the stereo on at whatever volume. And so we're saying, let's let the states take care of it. We understand there's rules that are already in force that we have a responsibility through the Marine Mammals Act and the Endangered Species Act and eight other federal acts that we have to comply with. But we don't need to be accepting large amounts of federal money that are going to dictate the actions of our governor and his whole cabinet and our legislature, you know, and be imposed upon us through the power of money.
And the sad part about it is history shows they get, if there is money handed to the state, it gets squandered and you don't even have the protection. The officers don't patrol. They buy equipment they don't use. And it's just crazy. But one thing, some information you guys gave me and I'm quite interested in, you say that there's representation that they're claiming they protected the whale. Can you speak to that? The sanctuary is taking credit for humpback return is bogus. Can you share your insight or your opinion on that with the listeners?
Yeah, I think it was 1966, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, something like that, whale hunting became illegal, okay? It became illegal in the worldwide, and the world banded together to stop whale hunting. That is what has saved the whale, because by the time the sanctuary came into being in 1997, the populations had already grown from their lows of 1,500, somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,000 or 7,000, and they are increasing more by 7% every single year. There's an estimate, depending who you talk to, because you got to keep in mind that they fly over the ocean and they count these things visually. So we don't really know an exact count, but it's underestimated because they're only counting the ones that are on the surface when they run into them. But they're estimating about 20,000 whales occupy the northern Pacific from the north to the south in our Pacific Ocean. And within this sanctuary, or within the North Pacific, which would be Hawaii, north to Alaska, and Russia, it's somewhere anywhere between 12,000, 13,000 whales right now that migrate into Hawaiian waters. And so, you know, they're on the road to recovery, and they've been on the road to recovery for quite a while. They've been increasing since the hunting has been banned. Now, I will give the sanctuary credit that they've done a great job of educating. They have a great detangling program where if they find a whale that's been tangled in fishing gear and so forth, they have saved, I think, 14 whales in the past 8 or 9 years from detangling. But I also have to make sure everybody knows that the fishing gear that they're being entangled in originates from far-off lands like Russia and Alaska and crab pots and stuff that's out in the ocean that new laws on Hawaiian citizens aren't going to have any effect. They're not going to reduce the number of whales that are being coming entangled. This is happening in foreign areas that we have no jurisdiction over. So, you know, this is a false, plan. You know, it's not going to have an effect on the threats that the Hawaiian humpback whales have.
Yeah. I want to get in here just for a second. I do want to say that, you know, because of the fact that the whales, they don't eat anything really down here to say. I mean, they might have a little snack once in a while. They're down here for mating, breeding purposes, to raise their young. It really never had a huge impact on any of the citizens of Hawaii. In fact, they probably enhanced our tourism and whatnot because of the fact that they do have this whale sanctuary over there. But the problem is there's tens of millions of dollars that are being used by the federal government for this. And when they start to include these other species, mm-hmm. and we're talking about coral reefs, now they've got all federally protected coral reefs. There's 89 species of federally listed coral from Hawaii that they've recently put on. And the people at NOAA told us directly in a meeting that they are looking to propose that all species of coral in Hawaii be put on the endangered species list. Now, you can put one and one together and come out with an idea, a reason why they want to do that.
Right.
Is it really because they're all endangered, or do you think it's because of the fact that way they can put more area into their sanctuary and expand their boundaries?
Right.
Of course, they also talk about ecosystem management, which is really the dangerous part of this whole thing, because you're not just talking about, they don't talk about species management anymore. It's ecosystem management. So anything that is encompasses on those coral reefs, anything that lives on those coral reefs that is dependent upon them, or the coral is dependent upon them, then you get into this position in which they have to protect it all.
Okay.
And that's when things start to get kind of dangerous, And, you know, you've got monk seals and sea turtles that go up onto the high tide lines. And whales are always offshore and over to the 100-fathom line.
We're coming down to the wire. So if you guys could, what's your name or your website, and how do people contact you? You got about a minute and a half left, so real quick.
Okay. Our website is www.hawaiioceanusers.org. You can find all the information on how to contact us via email on that website. We also are adding to it on a daily basis. You can find the numbers for your representatives, and you can contact them, email addresses. It's pretty comprehensive. You can read about all the different the documents that NOAA has out and available. I encourage you to do that.
Okay, and this will be posted at carolcox.com, and I welcome you to link it and get it out. And maybe in the coming weeks we'll bring you back, and if there's any of the environmental community out there want to offer comments or counter or what have you, feel free to contact us here at carolcox.com, and we'll do it again, gentlemen.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
And we'll hopefully you put something in the Hawaii Fishing News in the next issue, being a little more detailed, and because you have some valid points, and I share some of them with you. And, you know, there are things that we don't want to give the impression that we don't want to protect something, I hope. You know, that, you know, I don't want to say there's too many whales and there's too many turtles. I'm not going to engage in that behavior. But I think we must strike a balance for fishermen and everyone.
Well, a lot of our resources are wanting to be taken from us in the name of protection, and we really have to investigate the things that they're proposing to protect, if they need protection or if we're capable of even protecting them.
Right. Well, okay. Well, Scott, thank you, and Greg, I hope this advances your calls or at least get something out there, and we'll talk again.
Hey, mahalo for your time and for your audience's time.
All right. Aloha. Thank you. And then, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the actual noise that you heard in the background is the chickens that have become, the population has just exploded, the wild chickens on Kauai. You could hear that sound like a bird chirping in the background. Anyway, that's all about the environment, and these gentlemen do have some valid concerns, and things have been railroaded, licenses taken. The federal government has engaged in a practice, even right down to the point where they want to stop you and search your ice chest just because you had an ice chest. Okay, so we're going to see you next week, and hopefully everything is going to work out fine, and talk to you later. Aloha.
Listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
This is KWAI, Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.